been a week. Tell me, how is everything? Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome.
And welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight we're looking back on the year with some great guests to talk all about their year and some Christmas memories. And to kick off the show, Emma's in charge of the first song. It's her favourite Christmas hit. Sleeps, Emma. Three more sleeps. Are you ready for Christmas?
I don't know if you're ever ready for Christmas. I don't know. It was really funny. I was thinking about it the other day. Isn't it weird? Because you're in a similar situation. When your kids grow up, how different Christmas is.
Yeah. Well, for a start, it's that conversation around presents change. You know, as little kids, it was always so good to go Christmas shopping and things. Now they just want money or vouchers, really.
Or it's one gift. Because it's what they want when they're older, is so much more expensive.
Yeah, I know, yeah, than the novelty of opening lots of little $2 shoppy type presents is gone. But it's still a day to celebrate and it's a day to catch up with the family. It's a bit odd this year with having to work a couple of days, have a couple of days off, then randomly work Friday.
Yeah, that is a bit different. And really different for me this year because we're doing a bit of a swap around. We're going down to the south to have Christmas with my eldest son because he didn't get enough time off to warrant coming home for just one night. So we decided to have a week down around South Island. But it means, like, for my husband, it's only the third time in his life that he hasn't had Christmas with his mother.
Oh.
So that's quite different. But and our youngest won't be with us, but he will be with his nan. So, yeah.
Nice. Oh,
what about you? You have a crazy Christmas.
We have a big, big family. There's 58 of us around the Christmas tree this year at my brother's place. He has the biggest house, so by default we all end up there. So it's a big day, but, you know, as parents are getting older, these days become important. So that's where we will be for the day, eating way too much food. My family on sort of immediate family all two in New Zealand and some are flying on Christmas Day. So we've got to sort of juggle a few things around them. So, yeah, it's always a bit of a juggle. I kind of enjoy Boxing Day more. We get to just breathe and eat the leftovers.
Well, we thought for this episode that we, like always, would catch up with some of our friends and supporters. So we've got a bit of an eclectic mix of guests tonight.
Absolutely. People that we want to thank and people that have just been part of this journey this year. We've had a lot of different shows, events, exhibitions, authors, musicians on the show this year, Emma.
We have. Huge. It's been huge. In fact, I keep meaning to open up the spreadsheet and actually count how many guests we've had because at 4 or 5 per night and 52 episodes, that means that potentially, we've had over 200 guests.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's kick it off with our first guest of the night. Well, Emma, when we look back at our schedule of everybody that's come this year, we have had so many shows from the fabulous Basement Theatre.
I know, it's been fantastic. And obviously, we need to thank Elephant as a publicist who have probably sent a fair few our way on behalf of Basement and the performers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're really lucky when we look back on our year to catch up with the fabulous Izzy, who is the general manager at the Basement Theatre. Welcome to our Christmas special, Izzy.
Thank you.
I wish the audiences could see your background because it's full of plants and colour and lots of colourful post-it notes.
Yes, the Basement office is a very colourful, plant-filled place to be. It's really lovely.
Now tell us, how long have you been with Basement?
I started at the end of July, so I'm still only getting my feet under me after 5 months in the role. And so far, loving it.
What do you think is, for our listeners, that if you've been hiding under a rock and don't know where Grey's Ave is, how would you describe the Basement?
Basement is the underground theatre for emerging and experimental works. It's literally a little concrete hole in the wall. It used to be a grain silo back in the day, so we've got some of that heritage infrastructure. But it's a black box theatre and a safe place to make the most outrageous, experimental and emerging arts you could ever think of.
Brilliant. Now, when you look back on the year that was 2024, you're probably not allowed to say this. This is a tough question. But did you have a favourite show that came through that you really loved?
That is a really tough question. There's been a lot of really incredible works. I think it would do an absolute disservice to name only one. But I will say that our Pride season, I thought, was particularly good this year. Really stacked with all sorts of different types of works, both emerging and kind of more senior, and really was a beautiful reflection of Tamaki's queer community. So, yeah, I'll say the prize.
Brilliant, brilliant. And when you think of your own journey in the last 6 months there in this role, what's been your biggest sort of learning or challenge so far?
I mean, I come from a freelance producer background, so it's always been the show first. And I think for me, the biggest learning is that tempering that absolute desire of mine, going, oh, we've got to make the show perfect. But when you have 3 to 4 shows a week sometimes, learning to actually go, no, the shows are going to look after themselves. I've got to make sure Basement's perfect. So I think that's the my biggest reflection and enjoyment from the role for the last 6 months.
Yeah, because it's pretty huge the way that, like, during Pride and Fringe, you know, you have kind of a show upstairs, a show downstairs, and sometimes you have three shows in a row in each of those spaces too. So, like you said, you could have four to five shows in the venue in a night.
So if I add up all of our shows that were one night or longer, so not free events, not other events, we've got 163 shows this year.
Wow. That is fantastic.
It's absolutely fantastic.
And as you say, a really good space for emerging artists to get their work out and have, I guess, the wraparound support of all your team that are used to doing this.
Absolutely, yeah. My team are absolute pros. You know, at 163 shows, it's we hope it's not wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, but we sure know what we're doing. And so we try to make sure that those artists have our full support. But also, the artists know that we'll back off if they want us to as well, and they want to try their own thing. Absolutely. So,
and what does 2025 look like at the moment?
2025, I'll be very honest with you. The art sector right now feels a little unstable. There's a lot of changes going on at CNZ. There's a lot of stuff going on with central government that we're just keeping an eye on. So we decided to really commit to our flagship program, which is the Hire for Nothing program. And that's the one that really allows us to get through, well, we had 81 specifically under the Hire for Nothing contract this year. So we're sort of really taking a step back from really big projects, really big producing works, and doing what we do best and really going into, that Hire for Nothing program, supporting our emerging artists and making sure there's a venue here in Tamaki that is accessible in all meanings of the word.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. When you say hire for nothing, talk us through that.
So as far as we're aware, we're the only theatre in the planet that I know that does this. But we have a specific program which used to be Risk Share. And Risk Share is kind of the standard program around most smaller venues where you put on a show and the venue will take 20 or 30% of your ticket sales. Instead of taking a venue hire fee. So what Kat introduced in 2022 as a response to the lockdowns and that really hard time artists were going through, is introduce this Hire for Nothing. So basically, we don't take any cut from ticket sales whatsoever. The artists coming in will pay a small technical fee just to make sure all the tech stuff is covered. That's between kind of $120 and $150. And then anything else on top of that, they might need extra technicians, extra gear. You know, we work through that charging list. But more or less, you can do a show for $125 and that's it. And you take 100% of your ticketing fees. So what we were able to do this as well because we have our really strong three seasons, our Summer Pride, our Winter Matariki, and our Fringe Spring. So when we take EOIs for programs, anyone who gets through our EOI process, which is a pretty high percentage, you know, I think it's between 70 and 80% are successful when they apply. They're automatically put into this Hire for Nothing program. For us, it's a really good way to target who we refer to as our vital voice artists, so our queer artists, our Tangata Whenua, Tangata Moana, POC, deaf and disabled communities, and immigrant communities, to make sure that there's always a platform for those works here in Tamaki. And again, at absolutely risk-free to themselves.
That's incredible.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that's so good. That's so good to find out.
So you had a crazy build up to Christmas, which was a little bit different than normal. Tell us a little bit about that.
We're trying something a bit new this year. So traditionally, Basement has had a big, fantastic Christmas show. And last year, the show was incredible, but we really had to honour our kaupapa of ensuring everyone was paid at fair rates. And with the cost of everything going up, it wasn't quite the fundraiser we had hoped it to be. It was an amazing experience, but we also have to balance the books, of course. And so this year we're going in for a more eclectic Christmas offering. So we've got what we're calling our silly season, which we're really excited by. We've invited back all of our regular artists. So Bull Rush, No Homo, Tim Batts Podcasts, Dirty Passports Poetry Night, for this kind of eclectic week-long grab bag of different Christmas works. So we really hope people are going to come in and see three or four shows and have a few drinks, and we're going to be very high spirits down here. And then we're finishing off the season with Hugo Girls' Naughty Christmas Drag Extravaganza. So we're really excited about our Christmas season. And then once we get through those 3 weeks of pretty intense programming, we'll all take a break until the new year.
Fabulous. And, of course, we interviewed the Quizmas a few weeks back.
We did. Brilliant. So to wrap up your interview, we're going to play your favourite Christmas song now. So, Izzy, this says everything about your personality, so no pressure. But what song are we going out on?
Oh, my God. That is really, really hard. I forgot I had to prepare a song.
You don't have to perform it. You just need to name it.
Yeah. We'll do the rest.
Christmas songs... Beach by Wellness, who's a New Zealand band, and it's a great song about leaving work, going to the beach and chilling out and forgetting about all the stress behind you.
Brilliant. Sounds just like what you need to do after a busy year.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Izzy, and we look forward to catching up with The Basement in 2025.
Fabulous. Thank you both so much.
Fabulous contributor that we've had for a couple of years now is Karen, our book contributor. Is that a good name? A book contributor.
I like it.
Love it. So welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So tell us, first of all, for our listeners that maybe, because obviously we talk to authors that you send to us, tell us a little bit about your job. Like, what do you do?
Okay, so I've got three hats. So I'm a published author under Karen McMillan. I also look after other authors as a book publicist, and I look after New Zealand Book Lovers, which is a book hub for anyone who loves books.
Fantastic. Yes, Book Lovers is often pops up, I know, in my feeds. Yeah.
And have you had a sort of personal highlight, I guess, from the year? Was there a book that's done exceedingly well that you looked after sort of the authors from the start to the finish?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll talk about my year first because it's been kind of crazy. I had my new novel out, Turbulent Threads, so I ended up doing a tour all around New Zealand, so that was really busy. Of course, I had a new book called Elemental Heroes Hydrogen Showdown for Children that came out in September, so I've co-written that with my amazing children's book publisher, so that's like something that's getting the kids excited about the periodic table. Because I had a research trip to Fiji for the Elastic Island Adventure series, and I've just come back last week from a promotional trip to Rarotonga. So that's just what I've been doing with my author hat on. It's a great question about, like, you know, maybe the best books of this year. And I was thinking about that because I work with so many genres of books. I thought, chosen three great novels, and they're all by New Zealand authors. So very quickly, we've got Weeping Angels by Riley Chance. So this is a thriller. It's set in New Zealand. So business is booming for Weeping Angels, and it's an agency that helps victims of family violence obtain protection orders. But then Lauren, who's the owner, she disappears. So are these sinister forces at work with here? So this is really, really gripping thriller that shines a light on domestic violence. So that's a novel that I'd definitely flag up. Another one is A House Built on Sand by Tina Shaw. So this is full of suspense and heartbreak, and it's a haunting novel about family secrets. And it's about the hazards of a memory and the ghosts that linger. So it's actually a story about a mother with early stage dementia and a daughter who's battling these recurring dreams that are very unsettling. So everything comes to a head with mother and daughter when they go to the old family home. So that's another great novel I'd recommend. And the final novel I'll just flag up from this year is The Jibe by Robin Cotton. So this is a set in Auckland. So Ella Hampton's the main character, and she makes this mayday call from a yacht in the Hauraki Gulf, saying her husband's been lost overboard of the jibe manoeuvre. So his body's washed up a bit later with a gash to the head and other injuries. So the coroner rules it an accident, but as you read this book, it wasn't really.
Ooh,
I've got to ask, how many books do you read? And how quickly do you read a book?
I just read a book today. I probably read 200 or 300 books a year, but I'm a fast reader. I love reading. And, you know, and all the authors I work with, I do read their books. You know, I don't just talk to people about books I haven't read. But to me, there's a joy. Like, I'm honestly like a kid at Christmas. And like every time I get a new book, it's like, whoa, here we go.
Do you ever read a book, get halfway through and go, no, I'm done, not spending any more time on that one?
Very, very occasionally. Usually yeah. I'm dedicated to read to the end. Because sometimes books can be a bit of a slow burn to begin with. And there's actually sometimes nothing to do with the author. It's you and your mood, maybe.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, they really take off. So I'm willing to go, you know, the extra to go. Because sometimes I do read these books and it's like, wow, the second half is just like, what makes it well worthwhile.
What do you reckon is the best book for someone maybe with summer coming up that's wanting a poolside or a beachside or a lie on the deck type book? Is a thriller the right one?
Well, actually, I've come up with three recommendations that are newly released or coming out in the new year, which I think would be the perfect beach read. So the first one's called Their Island Feeling by Karina May. So this is where this character, Andy, escapes to Pool Island with her girlfriends. She can't ignore the, you know, connection between Captain Jack that brought them over to the island. So will the hot fling have any chance of growing into something more? So this is one of these great romantic comedies, and it's just the perfect escapist read. The other one that I've read recently, which would be great for the beach, is Special Delivery by Lisa Rowland. So this is this classic enemies to lovers romantic comedy. So a single mum meets this handsome midwife, and like they just loathe each other at first sight. Could have possibly changed love, even though there might be obstacles in the way. And another one I've just read, which is another great, great summer read, is Venetian Lessons in Love by Gina Lobolenco. So it's set in Venice, one of my favourite cities. And the main character's life is turned upside down when she attends this masquerade ball and she has the best kiss of her life because she has no idea who this masked man is. So she, as she's attempting to uncover his identity, she's dodging paparazzi because it's the 20th anniversary of her tragic parents' death. She's also got this Italian language school she's trying to save, and she's also got to deal with this infuriating new neighbour. And it's really about romance on the beautiful streets of Venice. So, you know, I think that's another, like, wonderful summer read.
Have you ever had any of the books that you have helped publish be turned into a movie or a miniseries or a TV programme?
I've had lots of authors like myself where their books have been optioned. But that's, as we all know, that's a slow process, isn't it? Yeah, I have worked on some authors that their books have been turned into something on the screen, so which is very exciting. But you know what? I'm all about the book. You know, it's nice to have a screen adaptation, but for me it's all about that book and that experience.
That answered the question. There we go.
And that's why you do what you do.
Exactly.
Now, I remember early in this year profiling your wonderful cookbook that came out with your adventures to Fiji, I think it was at the time. If you've just done some research in Rarotonga, are we getting another cookbook as well?
Okay, good question. So it won't be a cookbook. So the Rarotonga book has been done, but next year there'll be a book set in Fiji. So watch the space,
because it's incredibly exciting. I got the islands round the wrong way.
Do you know what? I have been too, because I've just done a promotional trip in Rarotonga, but at the same time they've been writing a book set in Fiji, and it's different culture, different characters. It's like, oh, get your head straight, girl. So, it's been really exciting. So it's going to be out in the middle of February, and I can tell you more about it when it actually releases, but it's very exciting.
Nice. Do you have favourite Christmas memories yourself when you think back to your time being a young person at Christmas? Was books always a stocking filler for you?
Absolutely. And, like, I was just madly excited about Christmas as a young child, as I think a lot of children are. And my poor sister, like, I'd drag her out of bed like at Sparrows, like before it's even like light. And we'd always like go into the lounge, and my mum and dad had always left like these huge Christmas sacks. They're not a stocking, much bigger than that, almost as big as us. My mum was very creative, like painted up, and inside would be little treats for us to play with and eat. But we kind of had the rule that we weren't allowed to annoy mum and dad until the bedroom door was open. So I recall, like, you know, playing and making my sister sing carols, you know, before we can finally the doors open, and then you're leaping into bed with mum and dad. So that was pretty special, actually.
That's brilliant. I love that. I don't think my kids ever respected the door close rule. Oh, and of course you were, you know, getting up to mischief at midnight, hiding things and making Santa treats, etc. And then you'd wake up 4 hours later because they've got up.
Yeah, that was awesome. I started thinking, oh, my poor mum and dad, you know, having these kids that were up so early on Christmas morning. But anyway, I guess that's part of the fun of it, for the children at least.
And are you getting a bit of a break yourself over the summer period?
Yeah, it should be pretty relaxed, actually. I mean, it's been a year of travel, so I'm actually just looking forward to chilling at home and hanging out with friends and family. So, you know, and we don't need to travel anywhere else because we live in such a beautiful spot. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that.
Fantastic. Now tell us, are you a caroler or a Christmas song fan?
Oh, look, for me, it's the traditional carols, and you can't beat, like, a good rendition of Silent Night. So I'm kind of a purist when that goes. Forget about songs about Santa and jingle bells and stuff. I'm all about traditional carols.
Brilliant. All right, well, we'll play out your interview with a good version of Silent Night. Thanks so much for all your support of Kick Arts this year, and we'll stay in touch and look forward to catching up about your new books next year.
Lovely. Thanks, guys.
So, Emma, we're asking all our guests, you know, highlights from the year, etc. What was a personal highlight for you in 2024? Nothing sort of that you produce, but something that perhaps happened in your world.
I think for me, it's been a huge year of international travel for me this year. Like, incredibly so, because the year, of course, started off with my two trips to America back to back. Like, who's silly enough to do that in January? But the joy of taking all those kids. So for the listeners that don't know, I'm part of Junior Theatre Festival, which is an international brand who run Broadway Junior Youth Festivals. And in January, I was part of being a tour guide going to the one in Atlanta where there's 8,500 kids. So we took, I think there was about 40 kids on that trip from New Zealand, Australia. And then the second festival was in Sacramento, and I took, again, another 45 kids there, came back, started the year. And then in May, I made my way to Birmingham for Junior Theatre Festival Europe, and then twice to Australia this year because Junior Theatre Celebration Melbourne and Junior Theatre Festival Australia in Newcastle. So huge highlights, seeing so many kids all around the world enjoying and loving musical theatre and Broadway junior shows that much, and all their teachers and all their parents and everything. They're just such a beautiful celebration of how musical theatre does, as Tim McDonald, the CEO, always says, make the world a better place one musical at a time.
Mm, that's cool. That's such cool.
And what about you?
Travel too, I think. Different to you, some of mine was more holidays, but actually finding time to have some holidays this year, taking a very dear friend who turned 70 to redo a trip we did when I was 18 was really cool. But yeah, back and forth to Australia mainly, plus a great trip to Singapore. But a real highlight was actually taking a cruise on my own just for a few days and doing all my blocking for my next show in the piece without any other interruption, no Wi-Fi, no nothing. And I really went into that last show of the year feeling so prepared. So I think that's my new rule. I need a 3-day cruise to plan my blocking of all future shows. Do you think we can work that into people's budgets?
I think that sounds a fantastic way to do it.
It really worked, because you can go out at night and have some fun and see shows and things, but in the day, there's not a lot to do on a cruise during the day, especially if you're on your own. So you sit somewhere nice in the sunshine with your laptop and your script, and away you go. That's great. So, yeah, travel, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it, as we get older as well, the mindfulness of what we do. You and I have consummate busy people, multitaskers, never stop. But I do feel more and more, like you said, for you, making the time to have breaks, to actually make yourself stop. And similar to me, I know that going overseas was absolutely crazy times, but they are times that are also about me and doing what I love. And whilst I constantly get told that I do too much, it's those times that actually fill my cup and keep me going, right?
Yeah. And it's also the times that you catch up with friends that are overseas. You and I used to spend a lot of time in conferences around the world, and I think that was sort of a highlight of those earlier days. There's less of them now, so you want to grab those opportunities to catch up with people that you might have caught up with once in a blue moon for a conference.
Because we used to giggle because we would see each other more overseas than we would in New Zealand.
And sometimes not realise that we were both going to the same thing until we met in an airport or on a plane, Oh, well, shall we catch up with our next guest?
Yes, let's. Now, our next guest joins us. It's a few people that have joined us have many hats, but this person, I'm counting 5 hats, I think. Maybe even 6. So let's see if I've got it right. I'm counting The Pump House. I'm counting Shoreside Theatre. I'm counting Foolish Wit. I'm counting The Theatre List. And I'm counting the fact that you have a bit of a role at the council, helping with some of our fantastic opportunities that you give to lots of people.
Yeah.
Have we missed any hats?
Yeah, lots of hats.
Yep, but so welcome to the show. Welcome back, James Bell.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. So, first of all, which hat would you like to put on?
Let's start with the Foolish Wit hat. So, we've just finished our season of Pride and Prejudice at the Pump House. went very, very well. Amazing response from the audience. And, you know, we were able to hasten actors, which is always good. That's great when a profit share show actually creates some profit and everyone gets to walk away with a bit of money.
Yeah, that is lovely because, I mean, and it makes it a bit different to a community theatre. Mm. Do you find with the profit share that it means, is there a different commitment or are the people in community theatre still give the same?
I think there is a bit more of a commitment from people, which, you know, they're particularly around helping to sell tickets and inviting people to come along because people know that there's something in it for them. You know, the more people who come, the more money there is. I think one of the cool things, though, is we're also able to be very community-minded. So, you know, we understand that people have jobs and relationships and children and they get sick, and so we can sort of work around that. So it's not quite the same as the sort of high pressure. We've got 3 weeks to rehearse and perform something at a professional level, but still at a slightly more committed level than say, a community theatre where, you know, it's sort of notorious for people just not turning up to rehearsal or prioritising going to a party instead of coming to rehearsal.
Mm. Now, earlier this year, you started a new initiative to help people here in Tamaki Makaurau. So tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yep. So I started a little email list called The Theatre List, which comes out every Sunday night or before Monday to tell you what's coming up at the theatre in Auckland this week. So people can sign up at thetheatrelist.com and they can email hello at thetheatrelist to list their upcoming shows. Anything that's theatre related, we sort of don't do music or stand-up or dance, but maybe dance, depends. If it's in a theatre and it's telling a story, then we're keen to share it.
And how's that going? Is it building traction?
Yeah, it's building really well. It was a bit of a proof of concept initially. I just thought I'd see if anyone was interested. And we've had steady growth and, you know, we've got celebrated recently over 500 subscribers. And it's got, you know, really high engagement and open rates and that sort of thing. So there's definitely an interest. And worthwhile promoting your event through the Theatre List. So in the new year, we'll be looking at how we can grow that a bit further and maybe going out a little bit more directly to theatres and theatre groups to remind them or introduce them to the Theatre List.
Fantastic. And then, of course, if we swap hats, you're a major part of the Pump House Theatre. So tell us some highlights from the Pump House in 24.
Yeah, the Pump House is really just going from strength to strength. I think, you know, there's always a struggle with running a venue around operating costs and that sort of thing. And we've been able to demonstrate to our local board and the council in our local area just how important we are to the economy of our area and how busy we are and how much variety of events there is at the Pump House. We've sort of essentially been fully booked all year. We're going into the new year almost fully booked, although people may have heard that Timbre Theatre Company is unfortunately closing at the end of this year, so that does free up some of the school holiday times at the Pump House. So we're talking to people now about bringing new shows in those times.
And we also know you must be doing well because you managed to recarpet.
We did. We were lucky enough to get a grant from the Cyclone Gabriel Recovery Grant back in the flooding, whenever it was. The main theatre flooded and we were really lucky that there was a group in there about to start, Shoreside Theatre, about to perform one of the Shakespeare in the Park productions. And so, you know, again, really lucky they all jumped in, did what they could to sort of stem the flow of flooding. But nevertheless, it still got into the carpet in the auditorium. And it was cleaned and everything, but it still sort of looked a bit stained. So we've been really lucky to be able to replace all of the carpet in the auditorium and the foyer area, and it just looks really smart and flash. And over Christmas, we're having the stage surface replaced, which, similar sort of thing, it got flooded and the water seeped in through the plywood on the stage, so we're lifting that up and replacing it with new plywood. So you can still paint the stage at a pump house, which is unusual.
Oh, fantastic. Now tell us a little bit about, obviously, coming up in the new year is your annual put on your hat for Shakespeare at the pump house.
Yep. So I've actually taken a different role with Shakespeare in the Park this year. So I'm looking after all the marketing and promotion and helping with the production side of it. I'm taking a bit of a break from directing. So we've got two exciting interpretations of Shakespeare coming up. We've got an all-female identifying cast for Taming of the Shrew, which is really giving the show a real twist on the interpretation of, you know, being perhaps one of Shakespeare's more misogynistic plays. Being performed by an all-female cast, really sort of ripping that apart and looking at what it means. And then Richard III, which is being set in the sort of post-war 1940s gangland London, sort of the craze and Peaky Blinders, that kind of feel. So that's going to be really exciting as well.
That doesn't sound like you're getting much of a break this Christmas.
Well, I'm doing less of the work than usual, so for
Okay. And are there particular things that you're looking forward to in 2025 apart from that show?
Yeah, so Foolish Wit's sort of going from strength to strength, and we've got two slots planned for next year, sort of mid-year and then towards the end of the year, and we're just looking now at what we're going to do. And I think that's sometimes the exciting part is reading all the scripts and sort of imagining how this could work or that could work and sort of casting it in your head with people that you know. And then you always go into auditions and find a whole lot of new people who are amazing as well. So, yeah, we're just going through that at the moment. And Foolish Wit became a charitable trust this year, so we're now able to apply for grants and sort of look at a bigger scope, hopefully find some permanent rehearsal space so that we can rehearse with our set and not have to sort of cart it down in cars and pack it up at the end of each rehearsal, which is always the challenge when you're, like, hiring a local hall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we had a guest earlier who was saying that 2025, they're not too sure about with all these changes in government and changes with Creative New Zealand, with all your different hats on, what are you seeing for the landscape going forward?
To be honest, at this stage, this is my 10th year working at the Pump House, it's always like this. There's always someone trying to review your funding or take it away, and it's always a fight. And we just focus on getting on with the work. As long as there's money in the bank and the doors are open, then we just keep going. And having gone through budget cuts pre-COVID, then COVID, then post-COVID, and then now the new mayor and Creative New Zealand and the new government, and, you know, we just keep doing and keep being resilient. And I think that's the great thing about theatre in general is the resiliency, and people just get together and put on a show. And, you know, it doesn't actually take that much to do that.
Beautiful. So tell us, any special Christmas traditions for you in your household or you with your extended whānau? What do you do for Christmas?
Yeah, so we have a bit of a get-together the beginning of December, which I usually can't go to because I have a rehearsal, but I don't have a rehearsal this year because I'm not directing a Shakespeare play, so I might be able to attend this one. But that's about it, really. It's usually just a quiet one, maybe a walk on the beach, something like that. Yeah.
Nice. And is there a favourite Christmas tune that you always rock out to, the one that no matter when it starts playing, whether it's November or December, it brings a smile to your face?
Well, can I first say, as someone whose birthday is the middle of November, it's not Christmas until the 18th of November. but I really like the Timbre Theatre Company Santa Claus Show songs. It might just be Stockholm Syndrome, having listened to them over and over for 10 years. So that always feels like Christmas when they're in the building at the Pump House. But I've actually taken quite a shine to Shake and Stevens, Merry Christmas, everyone. It's just that typical jangly sort of, 80s Christmas vibe.
Fantastic. Well, we'll take your interview out with that. And we wish you and all your multiple associations a merry, merry Christmas. And we look forward to hearing more from you in 2025.
Thank you very much.
Again, we've been, as we said before, we're talking about highlights and different things. Has there been highlights for you, Stephen? Maybe it might be a specific performer or a performance or something you've seen or attended?
Yeah, I think if I look back on the year from something we've done has to be Priscilla, the school edition. That was a little bit edgy and something different. But a highlight of something I've seen, both Take Me to Aussie and Rocky Horror with Jason Donovan, definitely a once-in-a-lifetime seeing him in that role. But actually, it surprises me. You know me, I'm a big musical person. I love musicals. I don't do plays, but I went to Woman in Black at the State Theatre in Sydney earlier this year. Oh my goodness, what a play and a half. The effects, just a cast or two. For a play to have me hooked from the moment the show started to the moment it ended, yeah, absolutely fantastic. And I think I love the surprise of enjoying something so different. Mm. Yeah. What about you?
I've had a few highlights, I suppose, this year. Obviously, Stage Antics extended back to Invercargill again, and we had a fabulous season of 13 Junior and then up to Queenstown with Fame Junior. So that was pretty cool from a producing, directing kind of point of view. And, of course, our annual Junior Theatre Festival was, as always, brilliant. In regards to watching, I mean, I saw some pretty awesome shows on my trips overseas. And being a child of the, who knows, seeing Mrs. Doubtfire on the West End was so fantastic to sit there. I knew nothing about the musical and, you know, there's so many other things on, but it was just so cool to see something that I loved so much as a child come to life.
And great music. It's been popping up in my Spotify playlists in the car, and I've been, oh, what's that song from? And I've actually had a few times where I've been surprised, and it's from Mrs. Doubtfire.
And then another one, of course, was Back to the Future.
Well, you are rocking the 80s, aren't you?
What they did with, again, with that famous, infamous, you know, with the car and everything and sitting in that theatre and watching the kids react to it was just phenomenal. Like, I actually find I cry a lot when I go to America because, and it's actually more about watching the kids from New Zealand watching those shows as much as watching, and myself, I sit there and pinch myself that I'm there.
Yeah. Wasn't it last year or the year before, which we actually reached the year that the car in the original movie travelled forward to? Like,
yes.
As a kid, you never thought that we would be around in 2023.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Funny, eh? Awesome. All right, shall we check in with our next guest?
Yes, let's. Now, one of our major contributors this year has, of course, been the Dolphin Theatre, who, of course, hold on to my heartstrings with their Tuesday special where you get a free drink on arrival and an ice cream at halftime. And
it really is the little things that keep you happy.
It sure is. It sure is, definitely. But welcome back to the show, Mr. Daly. How are you?
I'm great. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Great. So tell us a little bit about your year that you've had at the Dolphin.
Yeah, it's been a really fantastic year for us, honestly. A lot of big highlights, a lot of big changes that have come this year. Anyone who listened to this show last year might remember I was here talking about we had just done this big fundraising campaign.
Yeah, that's right.
Been in some pretty dire financial straits, as every theater has been going through that at some point over the last few years. So we took our turn last year. But we've really, I've really felt like we were sort of in a good place by the end of the year. And sort of as the year progressed, it's really, you know, it's really felt like we've turned a corner. The theater has really been imbued with a lot of great new energy and focus. And, you know, that love and that support that we were feeling at the end of last year with our fundraising campaign really, it really translated this year into, among other things, butts in seats, which was really great to see. You know, we had a string of really great successful shows this year. Clue and Agatha Christie's Black Coffee definitely would have been among our best sellers this year, which we, you know, sort of predicted. That's Agatha's always a good seller. But even some of the ones that we thought, oh, like they'll do pretty well, really they overperformed for us, and people really sort of made the effort and to come out and see us and support us, which was really great. We also had, among other things, we had a big venue hire this year, which was really exciting. We had a television production come in. It's a new series that hasn't gone to air yet, so I can't really say much about it. But it is set in the world of community theater. So they needed a theater to play sort of the home base of the show. And so Dolphin Theater is that theater. So when the show airs next year, Dolphin will be front and center, which is really exciting. They hired the theater out for a few weeks, which was great. You know, the venue hire fees are always appreciated. But in doing that, in going through their production process, you know, they gave the place a bit of a facelift. So our foyer has been transformed as a result of that production. We have new laminate flooring. We've got a fresh paint job in the foyer, new fascia on the bar and the tea servery. We've got this really great sort of faux brick feature wall down the side where we've sort of redistributed all of the things that used to be hanging on the walls to sort of suit the new remodel. So we've now got this really lovely row of all of next year's show posters sort of running down the length of the wall, and it really looks gorgeous. So that's been, again, it's one of those things where it's changed the dynamic the way it feels when people are in the foyer. It feels brighter, it feels larger, it feels more open. It's been really great to see, honestly.
And you've even, this year you changed your logo.
We did. I was going to say that would be the other big highlight we've had is just at the end of the year. So every year we do an event we call Sneak Peek, which is sort of a little look ahead at what we have going for next year, a little snippets from each show. And at Sneak Peek this year, we announced a rebranding for the theater. Our logo and our title treatment and all that stuff, it hadn't really been touched in about 30 years. I think it had been slightly tweaked in the 90s. Even the version before it looks pretty much the same. So it had been sort of slightly tweaked in the mid-late 90s. And it had been something that had been on my list for a while, that it really felt like, you know, we were trying to, again, bring some new energy to the theater and really kind of change the tone of the place and the way that people view the Dolphin away from just, I think, the way it had been viewed by a lot of people, which is that's where your grandma goes to see the Agatha. And so we've been trying to do sort of exciting new programming and bringing, you know, some fresh new voices into the theater as well. And so we felt like we needed a logo and branding that really fit that image. So we sort of worked with a couple of different graphic designers, and we've come up with this, on the one hand, we sort of simplified the text. We had the sort of ornate script that had been there before. It's now a much more minimalist sort of block letter approach. But it puts the Dolphin in nice, bold text. So when you see it on a poster on the street, you can actually read it from a distance very clearly and very easily. But we've also sort of informally adopted the way that people have always sort of referred to us, which is the Dolphin. You know, before it was Dolphin Theater. But when people talk about us, they say, oh, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the Dolphin. Have you seen the show? Mm-hmm. But we've put the back in the branding.
Fantastic.
And yeah, lovely logo that goes along with it as well. Yeah, so this lovely sort of Moana spiral with the Dolphin kind of coming up out of it. And it's clean and it's colorful and it's beautiful. And we're just really, really excited about it.
Cool. And you've also worked a lot on building community. I'm thinking of three kind of things you do. So, of course, you've got your final dress rehearsal night, which you've been partnering with I want to say Let's Eat, but that's not the right name.
Everybody Eats, which Everybody Eats has a few locations around Auckland, but they have one in Onehunga, which is literally about a kilometer down the road from us. And so, yeah, we've always done this sort of charity preview night, the Thursday night before the show opens on Friday, the final dress rehearsal, basically, which would always sort of be this sort of charity night. And again, traditionally, a couple of the retirement villages, the bus would pull up and the folks would all, you know, unload and come see the show. And that was their night. But especially during COVID and the years since, that really dropped off. And you know, the bus stopped coming. So we had to find a new way to kind of engage the audience. Last year in particular, we were really feeling like that night had just sort of was dwindling. There was, you know, a handful of people, mostly our own volunteers that were coming. And we really wanted to sort of, again, sort of reach out to the community more and sort of create an opportunity for people who might not otherwise be able to afford a night out to the theater, or, you know, have the time and the space on a busy weekend. And so, yeah, we've partnered with Everybody Eats, who they operate on a pay what you can model. So you go into the restaurant, you sit down, you have a lovely three course meal, and it's, you know, it's pay what you can. There's no minimum spend or anything. And so we said, well, that's what we want to do. So why not partner with this great organization that's just up the road? And so we've sort of, you know, they've helped us to promote their shows, and we've, you know, we put up these little sort of joint posters and marketing material. I go up there a few weeks before every show, and they put some of our posters up in the restaurants. People can come in, you know, in the weeks before, they have a meal. They go, oh, hey, there's a show. We should go see the show. So it's, the idea is you can go do dinner in the show. So I think they open at 6 o'clock. Our show goes on at 8 o'clock. So you can go, you can have a nice meal, come see the show afterwards, and it's pay what you can in both venues.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's great. It gives, you know, it gives people the opportunity to, you know, see a show in a more cost effective manner, opens the doors to people who might not otherwise come. You know, the other thing that's really lovely about it is, like I said, it's that partnership. We've seen a lot of people literally say, oh, yeah, I only knew to come because I was at Everybody Eats and saw, you know, and so decided we'd come along. And we, like I said, we've seen that night grow from, you know, last year where we might only have about a dozen people in the audience. The last show we did, Joyful and Triumphant, we had, I think, 65 in the audience, which is about half the house full.
Superb. And then you're also trying to encourage people to come in on a Tuesday and a Wednesday.
Absolutely.
You've added something to the Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. So we've always done Tuesday treats, Emma's favorite night. You know, get a glass of bubbles and an ice cream at the interval. But we have Wednesday was sort of the other night that has always sort of been kind of a slow night, and we've been trying to find ways to encourage people to come out. So we decided to get creative this year, and we've introduced Spin and Win Wednesdays. So we have a little prize wheel, every Wednesday night we pick 5 seat numbers at random, and at the interval we call out your seat number, and you get to come and get a chance to spin the wheel just like The Price is Right. And you know, you have a couple of different prizes on there you can win. Some of it's just, you know, a little, you know, bag of Maltesers or you know, a little ice cream or a drink from the bar. But we also put in there usually a pair of passes to see the next show at Dolphin. So there's a more enticing prize in there. You know, luck of the draw, you spin the right slot, and you know, you come away a winner, which is great.
Fantastic. And of course, you mentioned volunteers before. So we've got to acknowledge your volunteer army, who you acknowledged a few weeks ago at your special volunteers afternoon tea.
Yeah, absolutely. We try to do that a couple times a year. Usually, I know there's like a National Volunteer Week, so we'll usually do one around then. But end of the year, you know, we always try to find a space to sort of acknowledge and treat our volunteers. You know, the folks that aren't on stage and don't get that applause and don't get those accolades in public. But, you know, they are just as vital to the operation of the theater as everybody else, as every actor, director, designer in the auditorium. So our front of house staff, our box office staff, literally anyone who's been involved with any aspect of the theater over the course of the year. We threw a little afternoon tea, have everybody over, put out a nice big spread, you know, and it's really mostly just a sort of a social hour in a way, to just sort of let people mingle and, you know, catch up and say hi, you know, so they can sort of be relaxed in the theater, as opposed to, you know, usually these are the folks who are in the theater, they're working, like they're there because something's on, and, you know, they're running around trying to make stuff happen. So this says, hey, you guys relax, we'll take care of business, and you get a chance to chat.
That's so cool. That's lovely.
Very cool. Well, that was similar to us thanking people tonight. But before we finish the interview, tell us, what have you got planned for Christmas?
Oh, well, the theater is actually just about shutting down for the holidays. We'll be hitting the ground running in January. We've already cast our first 2 shows of the year, actually, believe it or not. We just snuck in auditions. auditions for both shows before the holidays. So they'll both be hitting the ground running after the holidays. Theater will be nice and quiet, which is great. I'm personally going to have some family time. I was at the theater today, and somebody said, "Does your wife and daughter remember what you look like? You've been here all weekend." And sometimes they don't. I'm going to be getting away with family a little bit, off to Melbourne for a week between Boxing Day and New Year's, which is lovely. And probably a lot of we do a lot of Christmas movies in my house. My wife and daughter love Christmas. It's like their favorite thing in the world. So there'll be a lot of Christmas music and a lot of Christmas movies in my house. I'm personally fond of Scrooged with Bill Murray. That's my favorite. So I always try to watch that around Christmas Eve or Christmas Day if I can.
So you've mentioned that your house is full of Christmas music. So to play your interview out, tell us, what is your favorite Christmas song or carol?
Ooh, all right. Well, I'm sure you're getting lots of classics with that question. So I'll throw you something a little new school. I'm a big fan. I'm a Bill Murray fan, and I like Bill Murray's Netflix Christmas special from a few years ago. And so there's this great song in it. It's basically just Bill Murray singing Christmas songs with other famous friends. And so there's a song, Santa Claus Wants Some Lovin', which is Bill Murray and George Clooney. And it's like the funniest. It makes me laugh every time. It's George Clooney literally hiding behind Christmas trees and then poking his head out and saying, "Santa Claus wants some lovin'." And it just cracks me up every single time. So,
well, we'll find that and we will play that. But thank you so much to the Dolphin for all your love that you throw Kickart's way. I should say, kick Kickart's way. And we look forward to catching up with you in 2025.
Thank you for all your support. It's been great to have our people on the show this year, and we appreciate you helping us out and helping to put all those butts in the seats. It's really valuable, and we love it. So thank you so much.
Brilliant.
Kitchen cooking, the children all fast asleep. It's time for Santa Claus to make his midnight cream.
Santa Claus wants some loving. Santa Claus wants some loving.
Yeah, I know there's something real pretty underneath the Christmas tree. But I ain't had no loving all week. It's beginning to worry me because.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
I've been trying to find this old bicycle. I can't seem to find my pliers. I'm halfway watching Mama for that sleepy look in her eyes.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
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 Break it down for me, will you, Paul? Holy moly, Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. What size shoe is that anyway? Is that a 7.5-8? Or is that an 8.5-9? Oh, you're awful fine, but I don't think you're mine. You know, there's no place like home for the holidays, and I think I'd like you to take me home, or vice versa. I don't want no turkey. I don't care if I get any cake. I just want you to come back here, Mama, before the children wait.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Driving me crazy, Mama.
Santa Claus wants some loving. Yeah.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Now Christmas is for the children, and I want them to be real pleased. But right now, Mama, it's Christmas Eve. Come make your happy, happy, pretty, please.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Some loving.
I am the king of Christmas.
Now, I know we're talking to a few of our sponsors, but I thought it would be a good chance for us to acknowledge and thank them.
Yeah, because Kickarts couldn't happen without our help from our fabulous sponsors, especially to cover our broadcasting fee.
And our our fees have actually gone up this year. Well, they're going up as of January because Planet FM is obviously a community radio who doesn't get funding as well. So the on-air fees are increasing for the first time in 4 years. And, yeah, it's nice to know that it's not coming out of our pockets.
Absolutely. So who are we thanking, Emma? Who are these fabulous people from this year?
So we are thanking, of course, the team at the Pump House Theatre in Takapuna.
Foolish Wit.
Shoreside Theatre Company.
The Dolphin Theatre.
The Factory Theatre.
Stage Antics.
Kids for Drama.
The Theatre List.
And, of course, we have to give a very special, special shout-out to our friend Ennie.
Yeah.
Who, of course, not only has been a past co-host in different things of Kick Arts, but he designed our website, and this year he spent some time to give it a bit more of a clean-up for us. He always checks that we're doing what we're supposed to do and tells us when we're not, and looks after our domain and our platform. So, Ennie, even though you shifted to Australia and left us, you're still there for us at the drop of a hat, and we really appreciate your love.
And you can see all his love at kickarts.org.nz, and also on there is how you can sponsor us by clicking a fabulous button that sends a few dollars our way to help us out. So don't be shy, 'tis the season to spread good cheer.
And of course, 2025 sponsorship is actually filling up really, really fast. We were lucky enough to secure a small grant from Creative Communities Auckland, so that's helping us with a few bits and pieces here or there. And we've also got a couple of our sponsors coming back. But if you would like to sponsor us, that might be for a month. Or just if you've got an event coming up and you would like a featured ad, which gives you the listing with a photo and everything and all the details on our website as well as the interview, get in touch with us, info@kickarts.org.nz.
Now, Emma, one guest who couldn't make it tonight was Kate from Little Sister, who has given us lots of fabulous tunes to play all year, but we asked for her favourite Christmas song, and she sent us this one. It's called Christmas Magic, and it's a song written and sung by father and daughter, Buzz and Grace. Grace is just 10 years old from Auckland, New Zealand, where on YouTube it quotes, "It hardly ever snows at Christmas." Yes, I can't remember much snow here ever at Christmas, so here is some Christmas magic.
Is it in the falling snow, in the fairy lights that glow? How does all this magic here suddenly appear? Is it in the bells that ring?
For our pre-Christmas episode comes from the factory. It's the fabulous Connie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm in over my head a little bit because unfortunately Richard contracted COVID last week. So he is feeling a wee bit under the weather and I am picking up all the slack over here as we wind up for the year.
Well, hopefully by the time this goes to air the week before Christmas, which of course is next Sunday, we're really hoping that Richard and Imogen are all well and good. So in the vein of Richard's 5 minutes, which of course we had for 3 months, let's have a 5-minute update with you about the factory in Kite Aranui and everything He Waka Eka Noa Charitable Trust. So highlights of the year.
Oh, I think my personal highlight for the factory was Auckland Fringe Festival. We had 7 incredible performances in, and wee bit of a humble brag here, but 4 of those shows went on to win awards for Auckland Fringe, which is just such a great testament to the amount of awesome creativity that's out there in the country at the moment. And, you know, I think everybody's feeling the pinch a wee bit in terms of cost of living crisis, and we all know the arts funding in this country is a little bit squiffy at the moment. But people just keep pushing through and getting stuff up. And I think that is like such a cool highlight for 2024, is that in the face of adversity, everybody is just carrying on. Kite Aranui actually had its biggest year on record this year. We are set to hit almost 3,000 bookings. For comparison, last year we had like 1,900 for the entire year. So we are honestly just growing in leaps and bounds, which is awesome. But we definitely still have space for everyone, which I love.
Yeah, and just a reminder, our guests have heard us talk about it a lot. Kite Aranui, of course, is the rehearsal space downstairs with the 5 rooms, which you can book through Space to Co.
That's correct, yes.
I did say that right. And then, of course, the factory is the theatre upstairs with the bar and the cafe and a fabulous black box theatre space with 110 seats.
Ooh. Hopefully more soon.
Fabulous. And the other thing that's been really cool for you is you've been a part of 2 Onehunga Business Association art walks this year.
Yeah, so the art walks have been a pilot project that was backed by Ikipanuku, which I don't know how much people are aware of, but Ikipanuku has recently been told that it will be dissolving. So we have 2 more art walks scheduled for next year, one on Valentine's Day, February the 14th, and one in April, which will coincide with the Onehunga Business Association's Music on the Mall. So we will definitely have 2 more, and hopefully these will just be absolute showstoppers, and the council will realise that we should be giving money to arts events, that things like this can continue. So our hope is to get a little slice of everything in. So just a wee sneaky preview for your listeners. We're definitely going to have a circus performance and some stand-up and improv at the February Art Walk. So pop the date in your calendar now. It's honestly such a fun date night activity. It's all free. So if you're somebody who's on a budget, you just get to wander between these beautiful spaces and check out what everybody is doing, and you don't have to drop a dime.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, it's almost Christmas, so what does that time look like for you, Connie?
I will be doing the classic Christmas thing of eating far too much and then having a million naps. I am really lucky that my whānau is staying in the city this year, so we're going to have quite a big Christmas with my sister and my mum and my in-laws and a few extra friends and wayward strays that we'll just try and tuck in there. So it'll be a pretty big day. Unfortunately, my father-in-law was born on Christmas Day. His name is Nicholas, which is really funny to me, but he is not a huge Christmas man. So we do Christmas in the morning and then birthday in the afternoon. So it'll be, yeah, lots of food, lots of family, and lots of laughs.
Do you have a favourite item on the Christmas table that is a staple that you must have every year for Christmas?
This is going to be quite a controversial take. I love Brussels sprouts. I love Brussels sprouts with bacon. And I'm just like, if we can get 800 containers of Brussels sprouts and bacon, I will be the happiest, most well-fed person in the world.
Wow, that is controversial. I think that's interesting. And what about any favorite Christmas traditions?
Yeah, we do charades every year, and the later in the day that we do it, the sillier and weirder that it gets, and it is really funny. My mum doesn't really understand the concept of what charades is, so she just kind of like mutters to herself, which is even funnier in person than it sounds on the radio. But yeah, we love a bit of charades.
Absolutely fantastic. And apart from the art walks, and Kite Aranui going through the roof with bookings, what else is on the radar for the factory?
We are so proud to be able to announce that we are going to be able to offer 11 residencies in the theatre next year. So we have funding to support 10 rangatahi projects through the Sky City Community Trust and one audience development project through the Alexander Harold Watson Charitable Trust, which is managed by Perpetual Guardian. I didn't have to write that down. I just remembered it, and I'm very impressed with myself for that. But
that,
what that means
was
is,
impressive.
I know. Honestly, it's like I went over it and over, and I was like, got to get this right. We've got to shout out to the sponsors. So what that means for these projects is that each project will get at least 20 hours of rehearsal time in Ke Te Ara Nui plus time in the Factory Theatre, whether that is a performance or a development series, whatever that looks like for you is what we want to be able to support. And the process to apply could not be simpler. Just pop onto the Big Idea and go into the Jobs tab, and you will see Factory Theatre, Rangatahi Residencies right up the top there. There's a quick survey that you have to fill out, and bish, bash, bosh, you're in with a running.
That is so amazing.
We can't wait to see what people put forward. We can't wait to support all of these amazing projects. And it's just something that we are so passionate about is giving people a chance to get something up there. It doesn't have to conform to one art type or another. It's multidisciplinary. Whatever you want to do, write your proposal, get it in, and we will hopefully get you up there.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, our 5 minutes is up, Connie. I hope that you and the team at the Factory and Ke Te Ara Nui and the whole Hiwaka Ikanoa Charitable Trust have a fabulous festive season. We can't wait to keep on keeping on with you in 2025. And we're going to play out with your favourite Christmas song or carol. Do you want to tell us what that is?
I've gone for a very thematic choice. We all know that 2024 was the year of mooding, so I would like to request I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas.
Superb! Love it. Until 2025.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus to play with and enjoy. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. I don't think front door, that's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. Says a hippo is a vegetarian. There's lots of room for him in our two-car garage. I'd feed him there and wash him there and give him his massage. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping.
Almost brings our show to a close. It's time to go and have that first of three sleeps.
I know. A little bit of work ahead and then it's Christmas Day. Let's hope for some good weather.
I know. Wouldn't it be nice? There's actually nothing worse, especially for you with your 58 family members.
Friends and a house.
If you can't actually open the doors and extend outward to the patio type area. Yeah. Are your presents wrapped?
No, I'm very much a last minute. That's a Christmas Eve, midday onwards. We finish work at midday and it's go home, avoid the shops and do all that final stuff. Yeah.
Nice. Well, we really hope that you all, our wonderful listeners, have a fantastic Christmas and all your wishes come true and Santa finds his way into your house if you don't have a chimney and enjoys your cookies and milk that you leave out for him.
Absolutely. And we are not going away. We are back next week with a special just before New Year's to look back on some great interviews we've had this year. So join us again next week. Well, we'll play out with my favourite Christmas song. We started with Emma's. Let's see if you can guess what it is. Have a great Christmas and make sure you
kick some ass.
Going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, blah, blah.